Jesus teaching in Genesareth, banks of the Jordan. Part 16. Jesus leaves Ramoth and goes to Arga, Azo, and Ephron. After assisting at an entertainment given him by the Levites, Jesus, with seven disciples and some people belonging to Ramoth, went northward and crossed the Jabbok. After climbing the mountains westward for about 3 hours, they arrived at the ancient kingdom of Basan and reached a city with two very steep mountains on one side and a long one on the other. It was called Arga and belonged to the district Argob in the half-tribe Manasses. An hour and a half or 2 hours eastward from Arga, near the source of the brook Og, was situated a great city named Gerasa. To the southeast of this, and on an elevated site, one could see Jabesh Galad. The country around was stony. At a distance, one might think there were no trees in these parts, but many sections were covered with low green bushes. The kingdom of Basan commenced here, and Arga was its first city. The family of the half-tribe of Manasses extended a little farther to the south. About an hour northward of the Jabbok, I saw a boundary marked off by stakes. Jesus stayed overnight with his companions about half an hour from the city in a public inn situated on a grand highway that ran from the east toward Arga. The disciples had food with them. In the night, when all were asleep, Jesus arose and went alone into the open air to pray. Arga was a large, populous, and extraordinarily clean city. Like most of the cities in these parts, where pagans form a portion of the population, it was built in the form of a star, the streets wide and straight. The mode of life was quite different from that observed in Judea and Galilee, the customs being much better. Levites were sent hither from Jerusalem and other localities to teach in the synagogue. They were changed from time to time, for if those sent did not give satisfaction, the people had the right to complain and thus get others. People of bad conduct were not allowed to go at large. They were sent to a place of punishment and there detained. The inhabitants did not carry on private housekeeping, that is, they did not prepare their food in their own houses. They had large public kitchens where all was cooked, and whether they went either to get their food and carry it to their homes, or to partake of it in halls adjoining. They slept on the roofs of their houses under tents. There were large dyeing establishments in the city, for they were skillful in the art of coloring, producing especially beautiful violets. The manufacture and embroidery of large carpets were also carried on here, with more skill to a greater extent than in Ramoth. Between the city and the wall ran tent after tent, where women sat and worked at long strips of stuff stretched before them. On account of the delicate nature of their employments, the people of Arga were famed of old for their exceedingly great cleanliness. Quantities of oil of superior quality were produced around Arga. The olive trees grew in long rows, neatly tied to trellises. Down in the valleys toward the Jordan, the people had numbers of camels and excellent pasture grounds. There grew also in this region a precious wood, which was used in the building of the Ark of the Covenant and the Table of Showbread. The bark of the tree that produced it was smooth and beautiful. The branches hung like those of the willow. The leaves were like pear leaves, though very much larger, green on one side, and on the other covered with some gray-colored stuff. It bore berries like the fruit of the dog rose, though larger. The wood was exceedingly hard and tough, and could be split into very fine strips like bark. When dry and bleached, became firm and beautiful and almost indestructible. The tree contained a very fine pith, which was extracted by incisions so as to leave in the center of the inmost plank only a delicate reddish vein. The wood was made into little tables and used for all kinds of inlaid work. They dealt also in myrrh and other spices, although these did not grow there. They tamed them from the caravans that often unloaded their camels and rested here for weeks at a time. They pressed the spices into balls and prepared them to be used by the Jews in embalming the dead. The cows and sheep of Arga were very large. When on the following morning Jesus and his disciples went toward Arga, the Levites and chief men of the city met him with every mark of respect, conducted him to a tent, washed his feet, and presented him refreshments. Some of the disciples had gone on before Jesus to apprise the townspeople of his coming. He taught in the synagogue after which he cured a great many sick, among them numbers of consumptives. He went likewise to many of the sick in their homes. Toward 3 o'clock a dinner was spread. Jesus dined with the Levites in a public hall, the dishes having brought thither from the eating house. In the evening he taught again in the synagogue, for it was the commencement of the Sabbath. Next morning he gave another discourse, speaking at length of Moses in the wilderness on Mount Sinai and Horeb, of the construction of the Ark of the Covenant, of the Table of Showbread, etc. As the ancestors of his hearers had sent offerings for the same, Jesus alluded to them as symbolical. He exhorted them now, in the time of their fulfillment, to bring heart and soul as an offering by penance and conversion, and he showed them the connection between that offering of their forefathers and their own present condition. But I do not remember it. The substance of this discourse was as follows. While Jesus was speaking, I had an extended and circumstantial vision of the departure of the Israelites from Egypt. I saw that Jethro, the father-in-law, and Sephora, the wife of Moses, dwelt in Arga with the 2 sons and a daughter of the latter. I saw Jethro with the wife and children of Moses, journeying to join him on Mount Horeb. Moses received them most joyfully, and related all the miracles wrought by God for the deliverance of his people from Egypt, whereupon Jethro offered sacrifice. I saw, too, that Moses at this time settled the disputes of all the Israelites himself, but Jethro counseled him to nominate subordinate judges. He then returned home, leaving Sephora and her sons with Moses. I saw Jethro recounting in Arga all the wonders he had seen, and many were thereby roused to great reverence for the God of the Israelites. The Jethro sent Moses presents and offerings on camels, to which the Argites had contributed. The presents consisted of fine oil, which was afterward burned before the tabernacle, very fine long strands of camel's hair for spinning and weaving into covers and curtains, and most beautiful seton wood, which was afterward made into the poles of the Ark of the Covenant, and the table for the showbread, I think. Two, they sent a species of grain, out of which the showbread was made. It was made from the pith of a reed-like plant, from which long before I saw Mary making pap. On the Sabbath, Jesus taught in the synagogue from 21:26. He spoke also of Balak and the prophet Balaam. I saw many things connected with both, but I cannot now recall them. That evening, in the Sabbath instructions, he related from the law of Moses, which had previously been read, the history of Zambri, and the Madianite stabbed by Phinehas, 25:7. Here Anne Catherine repeated in an admirable manner, although she had never heard nor read them, a number of the laws of Moses as set forth in 21:26. They were those that especially corresponded to her own position and childhood, and the ideas peculiar to the occupations connected with it. For instance, the law forbidding one that has found a bird's nest to take the parent birds as well as the young, that which commands the gleanings of the harvest to be left for the poor, that which prohibits pledges to be taken from the poor, or borrowing from them, etc. Jesus touched upon all these points, dwelling at length upon the law that forbids defrauding laborers of their wages, because the people of Arga live by labor. Sister Emmerich was rejoiced when told that all those laws could be found in the Bible, and she wondered at having heard them so correctly. The Sabbath over, Jesus went to an inn belonging to the pagans who had sent him, by the disciples, a most pressing invitation to that effect. He was received with great humility and affection. He instructed them upon the call of the heathens, telling them that he was now come to gain over those that had not been conquered by the Israelites. They questioned him upon the fulfillment of the prophecy that the scepter should be taken away from Judah at the time of the Messiah, and he gave them an answer full of instruction. They knew the story of the 3 kings and begged for baptism. Jesus explained what the ceremony meant, that it was to be for them a preparation for their sharing in the kingdom of the Messiah. These good pagans were travelers and had been a couple of weeks at Arga, awaiting the arrival of a caravan. They numbered 5 families, about 37 souls in all. They could not go to the baptism at Enon for fear of missing the caravan. They asked Jesus where they should take up their future residence, and he indicated to them the place. I never heard him speaking to the heathens of circumcision, but he always insisted on continence and the obligation of having but 1 wife. These heathens were at once baptized by Saturnin and Judas Barsabbas. They stepped into a bathing cistern, bowed over a large basin in front of it, which Jesus had blessed. The water was thrice poured over their head. All were clothed in white. After the ceremony, they presented to Jesus golden bracelets and earrings for the money box of the disciples. Those articles formed the principal part of their commerce. They were changed into money, which by Jesus' orders was distributed to the poor. Jesus taught again in the synagogue, cured the sick, and dined with the Levites. After the meal, accompanied by several people, Jesus went a couple of hours farther on to the north to a little place named Azel, where many people gathered for the celebration of a feast commemorative of Gideon's victory begun that evening. Jesus was received outside the city by the Levites. They washed his feet and offered him to eat, after which he went into the synagogue and taught. In Jephthah's time, Azel was a fortified city, but was destroyed during the war that called him from the land of Tob. It was in Jesus' time a very clean little place, the houses in one long row. There were no heathens in it, and the inhabitants were singularly good, industrious, and well-behaved. They had many olive trees skillfully planted on terraces outside the city, in which they carefully tended. Stuffs were also fabricated and embroidered here. Manner of living was the same as at Arga. The people of Azel looked upon themselves as Jews of exceptional purity, since they lived entirely apart from the pagans. Everything was very clean in Azel. The road led down through a gentle sloping valley, in which lay the city flanked on the west by a mountain. When Deborah ruled in Israel, and Sisera was slain by Jabal, there lived for a long time at Masphah a woman disguised as a man. She was descended from a woman who had survived the destruction of the tribe of Benjamin to which she belonged. This descendant assumed male attire and knew so well how to conceal her sex as to arouse the suspicion of no one. She had visions, she prophesied, and often served the Israelites in quality of spy. But whenever they employed her that way, they met with defeat. The Midianites were encamped at that time near Azel, and that woman went out to them in the dress of a distinguished military officer. She called herself Abinoam, after one of the heroes present at the defeat of Sisera. She passed unperceived through several quarters of the camp, spying as she went. At last she entered the general's tent and expressed her readiness to deliver all Israel into his hands. She had been accustomed to abstain from wine and to conduct herself with great reserve and circumspection. But upon this occasion she became intoxicated, and her sex was discovered. They nailed her hand and foot to a plank and cast her into a pit with the words, "May even her name be here buried with her." It was from Azel that Gideon went out against the camp of the Midianites. Gideon was a very handsome, powerful man of the tribe of Manasseh. He dwelt with his father near Silo. Israel was in a critical condition at that time. The Midianites and other idolatrous tribes overran the country, laid waste the fields, and carried off the harvest. Gideon, a son of Joas the Ezrite, dwelling in Ephrah, was very brave and liberal. He often threshed his wheat before his neighbors and generously divided it among the needy. I saw him going out at early morn before daybreak, while the dew still lay on the ground, to a very large tree with spreading branches under which his threshing floor lay concealed. The oak covered with its broad branches the wide rocky basin in which it stood. The basin was surrounded by a mound-like wall that reached to the branches of the tree, so that a person standing at the foot of the oak was as if in a large vaulted cave that could not be seen from without. The trunk was, as it were, formed of many single branches wound together. The soil was firm and rocky. Around in the walls were large cavities in which the grain was stored in casks of bark. The threshing was done with a cylinder that revolved on wheels around the tree, and on it were wooden hammers that fell upon the grain. High up in the tree was a seat from which one could see around. The Midianites pitched their tents from Bassan down across the Jordan, and even to the very field of Esdraelon. The valley of the Jordan swarmed with grazing camels, which circumstance greatly served Gideon's purpose. He reconnoitered for several weeks, and with his 300 men moved slowly toward Azel. I saw him slipping unperceived into the camp of the Midianites and listened to what was said in one of the tents. Just at that moment, a soldier exclaimed to one of his companions, "I have been dreaming that a loaf of bread fell down the mountain and crushed our tent." The other answered, "That is a bad omen. Gideon will certainly fall upon us with his Israelites." On the following night, Gideon and his handful of warriors, with lighted torches in one hand, the trumpets upon which they were blowing in the other, pressed into the camp. Other bands did the same from opposite sides. The enemy became panic-stricken. They turned their words against one another while being slain and routed on all sides by the children of Israel. The mountain from which the bread rolled down, as seen in the soldier's dream, was directly back of Azel, and it was from there that Gideon made his attack in person. The annual commemoration of Gideon's victory was now being celebrated in Azel. Outside the city was a large oak on a hill, and at its foot an altar of stone. Between this tree and the mountain from which the soldier had seen the bread rolling down, the disguised prophetess lay buried. This tree was different from our oaks. It bore a large fruit with a green husk, under which was an exceedingly hard kernel in a little cup like our acorns. The Jews of the Azel used these kernels for the tops of their walking sticks. For the accommodation of the large concourse of people, there was from that tree down to the city a whole row of tabernacles made of foliage and adorned with all kinds of fruit. Jesus and the disciples went with the Levites in procession to the ark. Five little he-goats, their necks adorned with red wreaths, were led in advance of the cortege. When they reached the oak, they were shut up in little grated caverns cut out of the side of the hill around the tree. Little cakes were also carried thither for sacrifice, and trumpets were blown. Different passages of Gideon's life were read from rolls, and canticles of victory sung. Then the goats were slaughtered and cut up, several pieces along with some of the cakes being laid upon the altar, around which the blood was sprinkled. A Levite blew fire from a tube into the wood, lying under the grating of the altar, in memory of the angels having enkindled Gideon's sacrifice with a rod. 6:21. Jesus delivered a discourse to the assembled crowd, and thus the morning passed. In the afternoon he went with the Levites and the principal citizens to a valley, south of the city, where, around a little fountain, were a public bathing place and pleasure garden. In the garden apart were the women and maidens playing at games and enjoying themselves. An entertainment had been prepared here, and, according to an ancient custom, upper tables were assigned to the poor. Jesus took his place at one of them. He related the parable of the prodigal son and told of the calf that his father commanded to be slaughtered for him. He passed the night under a tent on the roof of the synagogue, for the people of this place were accustomed to sleep on the roofs. The feast was continued during the next day. The tabernacles of foliage were intended for the Feast of Tabernacles also, which was to begin in about 14 days. Next morning, Jesus delivered an instruction in the synagogue, and outside the school cured many blind, many consumptives, and several harmless possessed. After that, he partook of a dinner and then left the city, accompanied by the Levites and others, about 30 in all. The road led first over that mountain from which the soldier had seen the barley loaf rolling down into the camp of the Midianites, 7:13. Then the travelers climbed by a defile over another mountain narrow, long, and high, on the opposite side of which they journeyed northward through the valley for about an hour. They reached at last a pleasant little lake near which rose some buildings belonging to the Levites of Azel. A brook flowed through it and down through the valley into the Jordan. About 6 hours northeastwardly from this point was Betharaphtha Julius, built around a mountain. Jesus partook of a luncheon by the lake. It consisted of roasted fish, honey, bread, and a beverage of balm from a little jug, all of which the party had with them. The lake was about 3 hours' distance from Azel. All along the route, Jesus had related parables of the sower and the stony soil, for it was over such they were then journeying. He also related another of fishes and how to catch them. There were some little boats in the lake fishing with draw nets, the capture being intended for the poor. An hour and a half distant was Ephron. It could not be seen from here, though the high mountains in its vicinity were distinctly visible. Jesus now took leave of those that had accompanied him from Azel and proceeded to Ephron. Azel was the best place he had met on his way in these parts. Jesus was, as usual, received outside of Ephron by the Levites of the place, and here too were found already waiting for him a crowd of sick. They lay in wooden chests, which handles were attached for convenience in carrying. Jesus cured them all. Ephron lay on the southern height of a narrow pass, through which flowed a stream down into the Jordan. The latter could be seen far away through the defile, the stream of which I speak was often dried up. Opposite Ephron rose a narrow but lofty mountain. It was upon it that Jephthah's daughter, with her maids, awaited the signal of her father's victory, namely the rising of a column of smoke. The moment she descried it, she hurried back to Ramoth, whence with great pomp she set out to meet her father. Jesus instructed and cured many here. The Levites of this place belonged to an ancient sect called Rechabites. Jesus reproached them for the hardness and severity of their opinions and advised the people not to observe many of their prescriptions. In his instruction, he alluded to the punishment of those Levites of Bethsemes that had irreverently, too curiously, gazed upon the Ark of the Covenant which had been brought back by the Philistines. 6:15. The Rechabites were descended from Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. In early times, they lived under tents, carried on no husbandry, and abstained from the use of wine. They exercised the office of chanters and gatekeepers in the temple. Those men that near Bethsemes had, contrary to orders, gazed upon the returning ark, and had so for doing been punished with death, were Rechabites who there dwelt under tents. Jeremias tried once, but in vain, to make them drink wine in the temple. He afterward held up to Israel as an example the obedience of these men to their laws. In Jesus' time they no longer dwelt under tents, though they still preserved many of their peculiar customs. They wore a hairy ephod, scapular, as a cilicium, hair shirt, next their skin, and over that a garment made from the skins of beasts. Their outer robe was white, beautiful, and clean, and was confined by a broad girdle. One of the points in which they differed from the Essenes was in their better mode of dressing. Their rules related to purity were excessively strict, and they had very singular customs with regard to marriage. They passed judgment after examining blood drawn from the candidate for marriage. According to this test, they decided whether he should marry or not, enjoining it upon some of their sect and forbidding it to others. In early times, they were to be found in Argo, Jabesh, and in Judea. They offered no opposition to the words of Jesus, but took his instructions and his reproaches alike humbly and in good part. He reprehended them most of all for their unmerciful severity to adulterers and murderers, to whom they granted no quarter. They were on this mountain many foundries and forges. They made pots and gutters, also water pipes. These last were formed of two pieces soldered together.